back to our 43rd episode of the Launcher Farm Show, where I interview Tobias Smulders with Remax Escarpment in Hamilton. In this episode, Tobias and I talk about why he chose to farm a small and distinct area with low turnover, and how he's managed to have a lot of success despite what traditional farming teaches you to do. Tobias also shares how he built his expertise in the area by learning everything he could about the area and how he uses that to add value to his farm. And he shares what he's done to gain mind share and market share in his farm by focusing on an area that didn't have much competition to begin with. And we talk about what he's done to maintain that market share. Plus, Tobias shares a super easy way to add value to the community by running a really active Facebook group in the area. And we talk about how he was able to leverage new redevelopment in the area by targeting the out-of-town developers to build relationships and get the inside scoop on what's happening. Plus, a ton of other ideas that you can use to grow your geographic farm. So be sure to check out this episode, like and subscribe, and enjoy the episode with Tobias. Welcome back to another episode of the Launcher Farm Show. I'm your host, Ryan Smith, and today we've got a great guest. It's Tobias Smulders with Remax Escarpment in Hamilton and Burlington. So Tobias, take a second, tell us a bit about yourself and why you're here.
Hey, Ryan, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate you bringing me on the show. I think I'm here. I got a decent little farm area going on in Hamilton. I've been doing it for a while, and I think you probably saw that and thought it was interesting enough to bring me on the show.
I'm excited to dive in because you got a really unique area, and you got a unique approach, and I want to dive into that. Before we do that, I want to kind of get into you. What got you into real estate? What got you to think about farming?
Yeah, totally. So the first part of that is what got me into real estate. And that is a big piece is I'm heavy into investing in real estate. I was a real estate investor prior to getting into real estate. And I always had sort of an interest or a knack for finding good investments. And then sort of at a certain point in my life, I said, this would be an interesting career. And went from there. And that's how I ended up in real estate. And then as far as farming, it was, you know, once you get into real estate, you realize it's not such a, not as easy as you think it would be. And so
fortunately and unfortunately.
Yeah, fortunately and unfortunately. So you definitely are, you get out what you put into it. So you got to find a couple different ways of doing that. And so farming that area was one of my early adaptions to my business.
Awesome. Yeah. And I know it's been good for you because we'll dive into it in a bit, what you've done, but you've definitely got a unique area and you've got a unique approach to doing it. So can you describe for the viewers, like, obviously I know where you're farming. Can you describe where you're farming and what it looks like for the viewers?
Yeah. So the Hamilton Beach is my farm area. So it's a pretty cool neighborhood in that they have, you know, it's like, I think most people or a lot of people pick like a subdivision or a townhouse complex or something like that, where it's very the same builder or couple builders, where the Hamilton Beach is very like eclectic combination of vintage cottages from way back when it was cottage country years ago to brand new $1 million new builds on the water, sort of knocked down and infill projects, lots of infill projects, lots of vacant land, and also all sorts of very mixed bag of homes down there. So it's kind of a cool area in that way.
Yeah. And so for the viewers that don't know, I'm in Hamilton. I live in Hamilton and it's a neat area. It's under the Skyway. So we have a big bridge that kind of connects Burlington to Hamilton. So it's this tucked away from civilization, but for a lot of people, it's a drag they got to drive through. If you're not going over the bridge, there's a lot of traffic that goes through there. So it's very unique for sure. It's not a subdivision home or like most, which is cool. And that's why I wanted to bring you on, because it's definitely a unique area and you've done some cool stuff. So why did you pick that area? Because it's definitely is not a typical, if someone's thinking about a farm, most people wouldn't say, hey, I'm going to farm that one strip.
Yes. A couple reasons. One was just, I have like, I grew up there. So I had like a special interest in that way. And knew a bunch of people there. And second, I just think it's really cool situation that how it's laid out and where it is. And another item is that no one had like specifically focused on that area. And I think, you know, when you have really high competition farm areas, it's very hard to break into that without having something really spectacular or unique to offer. So those sort of were all good points for us in terms of choosing that as a farm area, because I think you don't want to go into it lightly. It's definitely a commitment.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, farming is a full-on commitment. It's a long-term game. You can definitely get some short, quick wins in the beginning, but you definitely want to commit long-term. So how many homes are in the area? Just to give an example for the people that are listening.
It's about 800 homes over a 5-kilometer roadway.
So you got to listen to that, because it's very unique. It's,
yeah, it's a lot of sprawl there.
Yeah.
And of those 800 homes, it's like over 100 townhouses in one block. So it's a lot of sprawl, a lot of big houses. So if you're like doing the, you know, the walk the area or manually doing that. I also used to deliver flyers down there. Okay. I walk half the beach myself from a young age. So I'm basically just going back to my roots, except for I get more than 8 cents a flyer now these days.
So yeah, so the area is unique in that it's a strip. It's literally, it's not like a subdivision spread out. There's literally a main drag and there's a few little side streets. I think that's an awesome opportunity for you, which we talked about earlier before when we were chatting, is that the traffic goes through and like, if your signs are there, they're seeing it. Like they got to drive through that main drag to see what you're up to, which is awesome.
Yeah.
What have you had to overcome when, because of it being unique, what things have you had to kind of overcome versus a traditional farm?
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things is that it's small. Mm-hmm. So, and it's pretty low turnover in general. We would say like people usually move like every 7 years probably is on average. Yep. So, you know, you don't get a ton of turnover down there. So you gotta, you know, when somebody else gets a listing, you're like, ah, and the highest turnover is in the townhouses.
Yeah.
And a lot of those townhouses are built, new builds, and investors. So those guys quite often go with their past realtor. So not that, you know, we never do anything in those townhouses, but the get greater results from the, you know, long-term people that have been there. And then it's sort of an area that people stay in for a long time. It's sort of like not an entry-level home in most cases.
Yep.
So you end up just less turnover. It feels less effective unless you look back over the long scale.
Which is important.
You know, but in the short term, 1, 2, 3 years, I was like, oh my God, why am I doing this?
Yeah. And it's paid off. And I think, again, it's also important to know because it's right on the water. So it's the beaches across the street, some of the houses back onto the water with a trail. And again, it's a unique property. And like you said, it's attracts a unique type of person because either maybe it's a cottage for them or they're moving in from a smaller home and then investing in a home and fixing it up. So it definitely is not just like a cookie cutter family neighborhood. You've got a unique group of people that are living in that area. Who would you say is the most common living in that kind of neighborhood? If you were to, is it an investor? Is it a family? Is it a cottage? Like what's that look like?
It feels like mostly like long-term permanent resident kind of, you know, the family home or longer term, you know, more, a little more established, not a ton of little kids, like young families, not so much.
Yep.
Just cause the area, well, it has, you know, parks and the water and like I grew up there. It's a great spot to grow up. It still is a bit secluded. You know, it's a hike to school. It's a hike to go groceries. It's a hike to go anything. But I feel like if you're in a subdivision too, you still got to go, like, even if you're one block over from the plaza, you still got to get out of there onto the main road, go to the plaza. But it's definitely a neighborhood with a lot of long-term residents too. So it's, again, just like established people living there, I think, especially on the waterfront side, those houses don't turn over that often, which is like, the goal, everybody wants to list the nice waterfront houses, but they're, you know, they just, that's usually the end goal, not the starting point or the, starter home for people. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yes.
So for you, you said, mentioned you grew up there. Did that play a significant role in you getting success? Like, are you getting deals from people you knew, or is it just you chose it because you grew up there and that's kind of irrelevant to how you've grown it?
A combination of both, for sure. I definitely get a little bit of extra care because people know that I'm from there. Yeah. And then I had a couple of contacts with people who I was able to do business with. Mm-hmm. One of them was an investor. So they live there, but they also would buy homes, renovate them and sell them. And they specifically focus on it. So that was very helpful in getting started as well. They, you know, a couple of my first signs that everybody had to drive by were sort of ingrained with them, you know, helping me and starting off and, yeah. you know, I'm helping them sell the house, but they're definitely by choosing me, they can choose anybody yeah. that they helped me out too. And that was a connection from, you know, growing up down there that, you know, that's they awesome. Knew me as a child. So
yeah, that can be a huge starting point for people is that one or two properties for sale can be that seed that really helps take it off. And like you said, you had the connection that helped, and then you can then work it into more business, which is awesome. For you, how long have you been actually going at it? Did you start part-time doing it? Did you jump right into it? And what did that look like when you got started?
The first thing I did, actually, I took a geofarming course at awesome. Our brokerage. Nice. And so I took a lot of tips from there. And so that was early on in my career. My first year, I started farming it right away just because it was a goal too. Yep. And so now 10 years into it, I've been doing it full time. I probably have a couple of times where a couple sections throughout the career where I didn't quite do it as much on the schedule as I had anticipated on yep. doing it or expected or had in the past, but definitely like pretty consistently for 10 years.
That's and, awesome.
And I would say probably about 3 to 5 years into it is when it really started to, people really started to notice yep. and say, oh, that's the guy.
Yeah. And I think it's important, like you said, that it took that time to get there, but now you've got 10 years under your belt and that if someone else tries to come in there, like they're going to have to be 5-10 years to catch up to you of the connections and the relationships you've built.
They'd be better off to just call me because then exactly. I can retire and I'll just give it to them. They don't have to pay to farm.
Exactly. That's a great way to do it. So I want to talk about numbers and if we can dive in, because you said there's about yep. 800 homes.
Yeah.
How many homes are selling? Because for some people, they're terrified of going too small. I just did yeah. a blog about fear of missing out. And a lot of people are worried that if they go too small, they're going to miss out. I always say you're better to go small and crush it. How many sales are happening and how many sales are you getting out of that?
Yeah. So they have about 25 detached sales a year,
yep.
20 to 25, depending.
Yep.
And I usually do between 5 and 8 transactions a year there.
That's awesome.
And it's not always the listing. Like yep. I've had people seek me out too, just because they know that I have information in the area and they'll seek me out to help them buy too. So it's funny in that way, where if you become really specialized in an area that you'll come up for buyers too. So you're yep. really farming for listings, but it definitely spills over into the buy side of things.
100%. And I find a lot of agents miss out on that opportunity because they focus so heavy on the listing side. It's like, there's a huge opportunity to really build a buyer's business from that, where the people know you've got the inventory, they know you've got the connections, and you can advertise correctly and get buyers. And a buyer still pays the bills and a buyer still probably has a house to sell. I think the statistic I've heard was 65% of buyers have a house to sell. So yeah. you get a deal that buys there and then they've got something else to sell somewhere else. And it just keeps the transaction going, which is huge.
Totally. And to that too, also, you probably end up, if you're depending on what your farm area is, if it's really like the beach, for example, is really a move up area.
Yep.
I bet you're even heavier on that.
Yes.
Like yep. that 65%, you're probably even yep. higher than that.
Yeah. Cause most people aren't jumping into that price point and that style of home without having some equity or some home.
Totally.
So are you finding the people that are moving there then, are they from the area? Because it's a unique spot in that you kind of have to know that it's there to yes. move there. Is it, are you finding it's locals buying there or is it people from out of town moving there? Like what's it look like?
It's funny. Cause I think it's even heavier pressure from out of town versus our other areas like Hamilton overall, you know, we lately fluctuated around 30% of our buyers come from out of town,
yep.
but I bet the beach is even higher than that. Yep. We get a ton of people from Toronto yep. and just that direction because they see what happens on the waterfront in all the way along the QEW. Yeah. And they cross over the bridge from Burlington and they go, what the heck is going on here? Why is everything so inexpensive comparatively?
Yeah.
And so we get a lot of that. And then even like Burlington Oakville, you know, back when we could do open houses, it was definitely like very beneficial to do that because it was a lot of like downsizers coming back that way too.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. And again, for the people who don't know, Burlington and Oakville, their waterfront is filled with just mansions. Like it's a big, big, like there's very few parks. Hamilton, as soon as you cross over the bridge, there's very few homes. It's mostly parks and beaches. So there is limited homes on the waterfront in Hamilton, and you've got the biggest stretch of homes in the area, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the infill development too, because I think that's a big part of it as well. Like there was an opportunity because when you started, there wasn't as many newer homes. They were smaller cottages, like you said, and then people started developing. When did that happen, and what have you done to capitalize on that redevelopment in the area?
So it happened, it started probably pretty like seriously in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I think with that just demand and pressure, and then also the values in the area, they weren't always so like stellar.
Yep.
People thought it was like incredible that you could get waterfront property for, I don't know, $550,000. And I say waterfront, you're not directly waterfront. There's your property, which are usually quite deep. You know, probably the least depth you see there is 150 and range between 150 and 300 foot deep lots, depending on how the shoreline goes. And then you have the municipal property behind you with it's parklands. So it's protected. So they won't do anything there. It's pathway. And then natural grasslands and the beach. Yep. And but to be able to get something like that with that kind of view for 550,000, where, you know, the next city over is probably like 1.5 million minimum. At the time, people were shocked, but the values were low. And so now last 5 years, probably starting to see a lot more demand for newer homes and new development. And people started to sort of feed that need. And a lot of those developers actually are from out of town too. Yep. A lot of guys from Mississauga. As far as like, what have I done? I'll see any new site or any sign, I will always call. And I will always touch base, even if they're building for themselves or whatever. I just want to know so that I'm in the know when somebody says, hey, what's going on here? I have that information.
That's huge.
And so I always talk with these, whoever's doing the development or the build. It's not usually like a development in the sense that they're building like five houses. It's usually like one-off custom homes, almost always. Yep. There's a lot of side streets that had vacant lots too. Not a lot of side streets. A lot of vacant lots on the side streets because there's not that many side streets.
Exactly.
There's probably like, I never counted. I should count. I should probably know. But there's probably 20 side streets maybe, and each one might have 8 to 10 homes on it. So they, you know, there was a lot of development there early on because they could build cheaper, smaller houses and sell them at an affordable price point.
Yep.
And a lot of those, again, they went to out-of-town buyers coming in just saying, you know, they like new. And then in with construction, that's a whole like section down there that's kind of funny in terms of what you're allowed to do too.
Okay. And the reason I asked too is because you obviously saw the opportunity 10 years ago and as a development, and you grew with it. And a lot of agents, when they look at a farm, they're looking for this like perfect place with all the right things working with it. And it's like, there's an opportunity to see an area that's going to transition and shift and where there's going to be new development. And when you know you can only buy that much land for that price in so many places, eventually it's going to catch up and people are going to want to develop it, which is huge. So a lot of agents focus on, they look for the waterfront homes in Burlington at 1.5 million and every agent and their brother is trying to farm on them. You obviously saw the opportunity and knew there's change happening. There's an opportunity here that that people were overlooking, which is huge, I think.
Totally. And I bet every agent has an area or a spot that they're like, this place is like, I don't know. I look at a bunch of areas all the time. I'm like, this is undervalued or this is cheap or people aren't giving this area, you know, kind of the credit that it's due.
Yep.
And, if you, you know, if you're listening and you see a spot like that and you think, I think this is like undervalued, I think those are great spots to jump in and grow with them and get the knowledge for those areas.
Absolutely. So then I want to dive into that. You were just talking about the restrictions. I don't even know, because I've never sold a house down that neighborhood. And
yeah,
what is the restriction? What's that look like? And how have you discovered that?
Yeah. So there's a bunch of funny things, and it changed a lot too. So there was a period where they were not allowed to dig any basements because there was some issues with just water level, the tide, high tide, causing, you know, wet basements. So they had no basements. So there's a whole section of townhouses built there that had no basements because they weren't allowed to build basements at the time. This is a while ago. Then they set it to, you could dig to a certain depth, five feet below grade. Yep. And so a lot of people built these houses that were like walk-ups, kind of like almost like a brownstone. So you got your basements like a ways down, and then, or they would build crawl spaces, which everyone hated. Like every time I sold a house that somebody built with a crawl space, they're like, why would they do this? Why wouldn't they have a basement? And, you know, obviously there's reasons, but it's a consumer question. Like, what the heck is going on here? Yeah. So it was definitely better for the people that did the raised level living. So you had to walk up to get in.
Yeah.
But it was a funny restriction. Any restriction you do that's opposite of the lake, even if you're an existing homeowner and you want to build a deck, you have to get approval from MTO, from the Ministry of Transportation.
Oh, wow.
Because the highway is it's there. Like, it's not super close, but the QEW is within, I don't know, 350 feet, 400 yep. feet, something like that.
Yeah.
So they say that if they're ever going to expand the highway, you have to get approval. We'll go on record and say I feel like it's just cash grab, because they'd have to make the highway 25 lanes each way to touch some of these houses. Because they still have, you know, the service road on the other side too.
Yeah.
So, and then you have to get approval from the Conservation Authority for any sort of building. And everybody's really good at working with. It's just extra time. Like, when people say they want to build something, and I say, you know, like, what's your timeline? And they say 8 months. I go, that's like a very fast timeline. Like, you need to go through a couple different governing bodies before you can do that. And then there's also like a little historical section around there that was recently implemented from the Historical Society in Hamilton to protect certain things. There's a lot of like classic like gingerbread style looking homes down there, so they have not full heritage designation, but they have like certain stylings of homes that you can't change. Which I worked with one guy on. He renovated one of the original houses down there, and he was limited on his exterior appearance. So it was very cool, funky, like Victorian style peaked roofs with you know, angled triangle windows, and sort of he had to overcome a little bit of stuff with, you know, most windows are square. So they had to do some stuff to make that look right, and they had to be you know, like the cross panes, the country style with the little square etchings in them, and the color, exterior colors, you could only pick from a certain palette. And then you go inside and it was all totally modern. It was kind of neat. Somebody else had something like that. The original house could not be edited. So they put, renovated that house, kept everything, you know, within requirements, and then built a giant addition out the back, like a 2000 square foot square modern stucco addition to this cottage.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And I think it's important because you know all that. And that's the important thing of when you do farm, that's how you differentiate yourself. That's how you provide value. You know those rules. I don't know the rules. I've been selling in the business. I've been 8 years in the area, and I don't know those rules. So you do. And that's the important part. When you do farm, you can separate yourself. You can create marketing pieces around that. You can educate people. You can let people know. And Joe Blow, who's an agent, doesn't know any of that, tries to sell something there, and then they're pissed off at their agent because they didn't know that, or they run into issues. You can handle that transaction a lot easier, which makes you even more of a good choice to be the right agent for down there, which is awesome.
Totally. And even when you, you know, if you're competing with somebody in terms of like getting a listing, in any case, just knowing your stuff, you'll come off sounding like a professional, and know what you know, you sound like you know what you're talking about. And not only can you get the listing, but you can probably get paid your proper full commission too.
Yeah, exactly.
There's less discrepancy in that way when you sound like a pro.
Exactly. One of the things I talk about is I teach is community positioning and relationships. I call it CPR. It's the keys of having a good farm. The positioning is so critical, and that positioning yourself as an expert by knowing that information, being able to do that, you can blow your competition out of the water by knowing what you know. And then when you, like you said, you go into the listing presentation, you know the right questions to ask, you know how to position yourself as the next guy doesn't know any of this, and now you stand out, which is huge.
Yes, definitely.
So I want to dive into the strategies you're doing, because again, it's a bit different of an area. So what are you doing to actually get out there, get your name out there and get the business?
Yes. So originally, when I first started, I did a lot of postcards. And
typical farming. Yeah.
Typical farming. Yeah. And I was really consistent at that, but I think that my postcards weren't that good. everybody just put them in the recycling bin. I don't understand.
Yeah, yeah.
No. I think that those are handy, but I think we still do postcards. We do.
Yep.
But we just do them better now.
Yep.
Still consistent. Yep. I like to hit the area every 4 to 6 weeks, no matter what, even if we, you know, you go through lulls where you don't have anything going on, we still like to make sure that we're going through that. So we have postcards with our active listings. We really like to do some like really good marketing when we do that. So when I think everybody has a special interest in real estate, whether they live in the area or if they even just own a home, and they will always look at listings.
Yep.
So we like to make sure that in our marketing, we sort of hoop in just as much as we can to make it look the best and stand out. So when somebody, because they have to drive by the sign, which I didn't think about that at the beginning, but that's one of the best things that ever happened. That was not planned. That was a bonus surprise. And it was years before I was like, huh, you can't leave or come down here without driving past the sign.
Yeah.
Especially if you got two listings, like one at each end, it's highly visible. So I think that that's something that's very helpful.
Yep.
But when somebody drives by and they always look and go, huh, that house is for sale, and they go to our website, they see that our marketing is great.
Yep.
And that, I think, is sometimes a hard decision to make, because sometimes if you have, we'll say, not a house that doesn't warrant it, but a house that doesn't warrant it, to do like, you know, a $1,500 or $2,000 media package on a house when that's, you know, a little house, but you never want, or I never want, that to be the house that the guy living across the lake or whatever drives by, says, huh, wonder how much that is, because he wants whatever, a rental, a house for his kids, whatever, and says, huh, this looks like junk. This guy doesn't know what he's doing, because sometimes you only get one shot to make an impression on somebody, and you got to make sure that every opportunity you always look the best you can. So I think that's been an important key for us. And then also open houses was really, really productive there. People come in, you get a good opportunity to chat, you get to see again your marketing and your knowledge and showcase just what you know. So I think definitely as many touch points as possible that you can. We also did some event stuff down there. I probably should have or could have done more. So they have a garage sale every year. It's a huge thing. So we did like hired like is party ponies, so it was like pony rides and a bouncy castle, and had them set up, and it was free and free water just as promotion for people. You know, it's a lot of people in the area, so it wasn't just residents, but it was a good thing for, you know, kids especially. You always get good feedback when you give something back to the kids, and it's good to support the community and that sort of thing. And then the area also didn't have a Facebook group or a productive Facebook group. Yep. So I made a new community Facebook page with some sort of like, I think strong principles. Like I think a lot of the time these groups get made and there's sort of no hold barred. but we if it's not relevant to the area,
yeah.
either somebody reports it to me and I delete it, or I delete it
yeah.
when I see it. Cause it's just like, it's really gotta be highly relevant to the area and be productive. There's no bad stuff. Or we try to keep the bad stuff to a minimum.
And that's, you're speaking my language as far as the Facebook groups and the events and that kind of stuff, because I think that's such an important part. And again, traditional farming was just sending out postcards. It's like, that's one layer, but it's the other things that make an impact. It's when they see the postcard, but they're also in that Facebook group that you run, and then they saw you at the event, and and that is when it really ties together. That Facebook group, I've always said, is one of the best and underutilized opportunities for agents to create a community Facebook group. And people say, oh, I don't want to take the time to do it. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of drama, but with the right rules up front and the right, this is what we do, this is what we accept, it yeah. becomes easy to run, because it's like, no, it's not acceptable, delete. And then,
yes.
but you're still having an impact. And people respect yeah. that too, I think.
Totally, totally. And we even have, in the group, I find a lot of groups end up just junk for sale. So we have no for sale, no self-promotion. No one even, I've never even put my own ad in there.
Okay.
But it's amazing how many people know that I run the group,
yep.
even though I don't live down there. They know that I'm a realtor, yep. and there's a lot of other realtors in the group too. And they're very respectful of those rules too, because they're yep. there for, I think everybody likes the positivity and stuff yep. in that group. So there was a demand for, a for sale beach for sale group too. So there was actually somebody else in the group that wanted to have for sale. I said, I don't want to like run a for sale group. So yeah. we even put right in the rules, this is not a for sale group, but we cross link it with that group.
Nice.
So they know. And anytime something gets deleted, that's a for sale thing automatically. It just sends like, you know, the messenger post is deleted. You know, here's the for sale group.
Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So I want to ask about the uniqueness with the trail behind it.
Yes.
You've got those properties. Are you doing anything to capture foot traffic of people walking by? Because I think there's a huge opportunity where I know I walk down there all the time. Like I'm there once or twice a week doing my nightly walks, and I don't see many for sale signs on that side of things. Are you doing anything to capture people who are walking?
So I do a lot of signage on there when we have listings. The Parkland Authority, they like to take them.
Oh, okay. that explains. Okay.
Yeah. But it was, again, with open houses, I really miss open houses. With open yeah. houses, it was awesome because you put the sign out for, you know, 6 hours for the day, which is, you know, weekend, usually the best time to have it there anyway.
Yep.
And they're there, and you get the opportunity to get that exposure. So definitely that's like an untapped resource. Mm. I know that I have put signs out there. And the Parkland company called, and they're like, hey, your sign's on our property. but there are homes that have like well-situated backyards to yes. be able to put a sign back there.
Yep.
Some of them they're too close, so you can't, but
okay.
a lot of them, you do get an opportunity to do that. It's very, very cool.
And I have seen your signs, which is why I asked, because I know they're, I've seen properties like there's not even a sign here. I'm like, they're missing out on a huge opportunity, but that does make sense if they get
yes.
nailed for it. So that
yeah.
that makes sense.
And so, and it was one of my clients that was selling their house before I was in real estate. They told me that they literally had their sign out on the pathway, and it wasn't even on the lakefront house. It was down on the pathway, okay. just house for sale. And it was down one of the entry points.
Yeah.
And the person came out, walked up, knocked on their door, and bought their house.
Wow.
Yeah.
that's what's cool about that area, is because then people are out there walking and then discover it and go, hey, this is I didn't know about this place. This is a cool area. And I'm sure you get a lot of people who are, or just driving through and see it. I want to ask before you wrap up, have you seen anything like, because again, if people don't know, if the bridge gets closed and you get a lot of traffic coming through, have you seen an influx in that? Or because I'm sure you probably are praying for like the bridge to be closed down, has to be driving by there.
We had a bunch of closures in the past couple of years too. We did not get that much more action on it. No, but that's a cool thought. But yeah, when that bridge closes, that place becomes like anarchy down there too.
Yeah.
And there's a problem too with speeding down there. That's a big thing. We might work with the residents on too. I think that's one of the next things on my list. Get like 800 signs for people to put along there, like caution, slow down.
Yeah.
Because there are better, if you're just going through, if you're just passing through, there is a better route on the Eastport Drive. It's faster, your 80 kilometer speed limit. You can drive down there as opposed to the beach is 50. And, you know, there's people crisscrossing there. There's no stop signs. There's no stop lights. So it's, you know, we want to make sure it's safe for everybody go to access the beach too.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things there for sure.
That's awesome. Well, if you were to wrap up and give one piece of advice, if someone's thinking about starting a farm, kind of getting their bearings, what piece of advice would you give to our viewers?
I would say that you definitely like consistency.
Yeah.
Or be very, it feels almost lackluster in the beginning. I even know that my Facebook group, when I made it, I was like 25 people and 10 of them are my family. What am I doing here? It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now we've grown that group to over 2,500 people.
Wow.
And you know, for only 800 residents, like there's a lot of people that join that group, that just like the beach and they may not live there, but it's definitely like, you know, you want to be persistent with that stuff.
That's awesome. Awesome. And we always wrap up with your best book. So what's one book that you would recommend that's either made an impact in your life or you think would have an impact on my viewers' lives?
I always recommend this book to everybody. The Richest Man in Babylon, because I love investment. And a lot of people had told me that it's a hard read. So I read recently, it's always been on my list, but I read The Wealthy Barber.
Yes.
And I think that that captures most of the concepts in that book, and it's an easier read.
Awesome. So yeah,
it's one of those two, or both.
It's a easy and a quick read too. I did an open house one time, and I read almost all of it at the open house. No one showed up, and I just sat and read the book. it's a small book, so it's good.
Yeah.
So we'll put that in the show notes so people can check that out. That's awesome. And how can people connect and check out what you're up to then?
Yeah, totally. So we have all of our social media, Facebook, Instagram, Team Smolders or TR Smolders. And for people who are interested in investment, we have an investment podcast too.
Awesome. We'll put that in the show notes so people can check that out. What's the name of it?
It's called The Pig Podcast, Platinum Investment Group.
Awesome. We'll put that in the notes so people can check it out. So Tobias, thank you so much for being on here. I'm glad to have you on. As I mentioned to you earlier, I was trying to get you on because I love the area. I walked down there and it was awesome to see what you're up to and hear more about what you're doing. So thank you for sharing your wisdom and your insight. And I know my viewers are really going to appreciate this episode.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks. Thanks for checking out today's episode. If you'd like more videos like this, be sure to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Check out our Facebook page and our other social media channels. Looking forward to bringing you more great content like this, and happy farming.